Clinton Young, who is an international keynote speaker and a world-class coach for aspiring speakers as well, and also founder of SpeakerPosse.com, which we're going to find out more about. Hi, Clinton. Hello.
Welcome to the Boss Ladies Mindset Channel, powered by Crown for Success, the largest women's empowerment network for soulful CEOs on social media. We are a coaching business that mentors and motivates women to reach their highest potential in business and mindset mastery. Each one of our episodes will share valuable tips, resources, interviews, and empowering information that will help boss ladies design a life and business they're crazy as fuck about.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Be Free, Be Fun, Be Fearless series, videos and podcasts, however you may be listening or viewing. I am Dr. Rana Al-Falaki, founder of Light Changes Coaching, and I am thrilled today to be joined by somebody who has promised me he's going to instill fun, fearlessness and freedom into this talk. We're also going to rate him by the end of this to see just how good a podcast guest he is, because he's promised me he is an awesome podcast guest. So I've told him I'm going to grade him out of 10. You may want to help me with that. But this is Clinton Young, who is an international keynote speaker and a world-class coach for aspiring speakers as well, and also founder of SpeakerPosse.com, which we're going to find out more about. Hi, Clinton. Hello. Welcome.
Hello, Rena. It's so great to be here, and I'm realizing I should have kept my mouth shut, because that was quite the intro there. There's quite the build-up here.
There's expectation, my friend. Expectation, but that's okay. It's all right. Raise the bar.
I can take it. Yes, I can take it. Here we go.
Here we go. So tell me, my lovely, obviously we met a couple of weeks ago, and I loved your energy, and I love the things that you were talking about, and the ultimate inspiration of ways to inspire people, but through something to do with finding their voice, or it's not so much finding their voice, but their ability to express it when they have a message. So I would love to know more about your story first. Well, actually, I want to know about your story, and I want to know about what you do. So you can take it in whichever order you like.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, as you mentioned, Rena, first of all, it's great to be here. Love being on podcasts. And my goal and my commitment to all your listeners today is that they will feel free and feel have fun and feel fearless. So let's do that. So I do help people express their unique message, right? I work with people that are not just people that just kind of want to speak, but people that have a burning desire to share their message with the world. And they have this sort of innate feeling deep down in their bones that they're meant to have a calling of delivering a message, and they just don't know how to get there, or they need support and assistance to become that world-class speaker to make the kind of impact they want to make. But how did I get to that space? Like, why is that important to me, right? Well, I'd always been somebody who gravitated towards, and this is going to sound kind of remedial at first, but I've always been somebody that gravitated towards feeling good, right? Like, as a kid, before I even knew what personal growth was or personal development, I didn't really even understand the there's a distinction between personal growth and academic growth, right? I could liken academic growth to, and I have a master's degree. I know you're highly educated as well, and a lot of your listeners are professionals and probably have higher level, college or university educations, maybe even graduate level. So I value academic education, but I feel like it's kind of like planting in a garden. All right, for any gardeners out there, I'm not really a gardener, but it's more like planting. You're planting, you're learning. And I feel like at one point in my life, I had this experience of personal growth and personal development. And what I would liken that to is, it's almost like now you're the gardener, and now you're weeding the garden, and you're now taking things out that perhaps I learned that. Okay, that's great. Now I'm refining. Now I'm figuring out, what are my values? What are my passions? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses, right? What are the things that when I do them, they light me up and they give me life. So now I know where to spend my time. Now I'm a little bit more, I guess you could say, efficient and effective at doing the things that make me feel good and doing the things that I provide the most value in. And ultimately, that's where I'm the most aligned with who I truly, truly am, right? So hopefully that made sense. But ultimately, that's kind of the distinction that I had about, this was about 15, 20 years ago when I got first introduced to the world of personal growth and development. And now I wasn't just haphazardly going towards things where that I felt quote unquote good, right? Like I would be good at speaking on the phone. So all of a sudden I'm in a sales role, right? It wasn't like conscious, like, oh wait, I'm good at sales. I didn't know I was good at that. I just knew that I felt normal. It felt natural to do things where I was out talking to people. So I would gravitate towards those roles. That was before I had sort of this personal awareness moment in my life. And then when I started to really discover, wow, there's power in having more intentionality in my life, being engaged in my own learning, not just going through, like for me, I kind of went through the motions in undergrad I have a psychology degree, a bachelor's degree. And then I had this experience overseas and I had this fire of passion lit up in me around culture. And that's what brought me to grad school. So ultimately, I had this experience where I got more engaged in my own learning and what was important to me. And I started to follow my passion, right? And that ultimately led me that's just very, very high level of how I became a speaker. Is I was on stage one day and I was just lit up. Like I was totally, totally in the moment. And I had this experience where I was so connected to the audience. Like you could feel the emotion in the room. You could feel the connection. You could cut it with a knife. It was so palpable. I literally said in the room, I was like, do you feel that? And they're like, yeah, I do. Keep going. Right? So it's like, it's again, I always have been somebody that followed this feeling good. And it sounds really rudimentary and unsophisticated when you think of it. But at the end of the day, I feel like we are all here to feel good. Like, and we feel the best when we were the most aligned with who we truly are, with our natural gifts and talents, with really understanding ourself. And that's the self-awareness and the personal growth and development. And as I've gotten more and more in tune with that, I've realized that speaking is my gift and my talent. Am I the best in the absolute world? No, I'm not. You know, there's people that are better than me, but it's the thing that when I'm doing it, I feel alive. I feel free, yeah. Right? I feel like I'm adding the most value.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you say. I want to pick you up on a couple of those points. So yeah, when you feel alive, when you feel like you're giving the most value, when you feel like you're gravitating towards something that is so natural for you, that is so much to do with finding your purpose and your passion, because people struggle with that. They sit there and they wonder, what is my purpose? And what am I passionate about? I mean, I nearly ended up in a massive fight with a friend the other day because he just thought that I was judging him. And I mean, goodness me, my conversations are never judgmental. So obviously that said more about him than me. But he got really up when I was saying, well, what are you passionate about? Because he took it to mean, oh, me, you know, because he was starting to feel inadequate because maybe he didn't have hobbies and interests. And I was trying to explain, hey, that's not what your passions are. Your passions are about what lights you up in the day. What is that fire under you that wants to skyrocket you? And that doesn't mean a hobby or an interest. It can just be what makes you feel that you've had the best, most incredible day ever, right?
Yeah. And one
other thing about the gardening, because I just want to clarify this. Yeah. Kind of you skimmed over it. So I just want to make sure I'm clear in understanding. So the idea is, say, what came to mind when you were speaking was we have a garden and then you start to decide what you want to do with it. So presumably it may be the decision of some people are really passionate about getting rid of stuff and will just want to be weeding and pulling stuff out and making it perfect. And whereas somebody else might choose to plant something or maybe put some flowers here or be, you know, be really structured and really organized. Was I hearing that right?
So let me clarify that a little bit more. And then I definitely want to come back to purpose and passion. I want to share a little bit about on that, but let me share. So what I mean by that is I feel like throughout our lives, most people were learning more and more things, and some people at a more intentional rate than others and more aggressive rate than others. Like we really want to learn more and more and more and more. And that's great, right? A lot of that is what I would call academic learning. And that's more like the planting in the garden. You're planting things. But if we don't have a certain level of, I would say, consciousness and awareness that like everything that you learn is not necessarily the thing that's like perfect for you to learn. Like you, it might not be the thing that is truly aligned with who you really are. Somebody might have just told you, go learn. I know that you have a dental background. I have no idea about how you got down that road, but somebody might be like, go be a dentist because I want you to be a dentist. Like a lot of us, our parents want us to be, go be a lawyer because, you know, that's the safe thing to do. But you might grow up and be like, I don't want to do that, right? So without that awareness, I'm just using a really simple example here. Without that awareness, we can go down the path and plant a lot of things in our garden. And before you know it, we just have this really clogged up garden with a bunch of great stuff, but it's not truly who we are. So there's not a lot of movement. There's not a lot of free flowingness in that because it's not.
We end up stuck.
What's that?
We end up stuck doing things that perhaps
yes.
we don't want to do.
Yes, yes. Yes. And that's where I found myself in. I was in corporate America and it's like, it's great. Like I had great director level positions and I feel like everything always happens for a reason and it's always perfect. No matter how uncomfortable it might seem in the moment, it's always perfect because everything that happens to us, I feel in our lives is there for us to be able to utilize once we get the learning from that experience. So personal growth and development is that moment where we start to realize we can still learn and still plant things, but do the things that are really aligned with our gifts and talents and our passions. And a lot of people, you're right. When I ask people, what are you passionate about? A lot of times people don't know. They're like, wow, I have no idea. And I have a personal experience of what you just shared. I felt inadequate when my wife right now, I say current, I've only been married once. My only wife, we got married 12 years ago, just about. And when we first met, this was the beginning stages of my personal awareness experience. Like I've been introduced to personal development and learning more about myself and my strengths, my weaknesses. Again, which is more about learning what you like, what you don't like. All right, let's take some of this out. Let's be a little more intentional about what I am going to plant, right? So now I have a beautiful garden that just has exactly what I want planted in it. First of all, does that clear up the gardening reference?
Yep, got the gardening. Okay. Yep. So it comes to, in consciousness, you have choice. Part of becoming yes. conscious is about having choice. So realizing that instead of what our parents might have told us to plant or to weed or whatever it is we happen to do, we start doing what we like or what we believe in. We may have a value for nature. We may prefer trees. We may want to grow vegetables because that happens to be our value. So as yes. we start to rise in consciousness and therefore use choice, we start to create a little bit more effectively. So that, from what I'm hearing from you, that's the first layer.
Yes, that is the first layer, 1,000%. Now, so many people, I speak all around the world, as I shared with you, and my speech is called Reigniting Your Human Spirit, and perhaps we'll get into how that came to be. And so many people come up to me and ask me, Rena, how do I find my purpose? And this may go against what you've said perhaps in the past. I'm not sure, but let me just share an alternative perspective because what I'm about to say is probably going to like shock you a little bit and perhaps your listeners. They say, how do I find my purpose? And I say, if you're looking for your purpose, stop. If you're looking for your purpose, stop. I know that's a little shocking because I'm like, I'm really about, you know, my purpose and your purpose. But I say, if you're looking for your purpose, stop. It will be waiting for you or it will be revealed to you when you start doing the things that you love, right? So if you're looking for your purpose, like actively like manically. So many people want to find their purpose, and I love it. And they want to be purposeful. They want to have meaning in their life. They want to make an impact, and I love that. But if you're going out and like searching for it, I feel like that's the wrong approach. I feel like the right approach is to discover what are the things that light you up, that personal growth and development, right? That awareness of who you truly are. What are your natural gifts and talents? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are your passions? And some people are like, well, I don't even know what I'm passionate about. My wife asked me that 12, 13 years ago, and I felt so inadequate because I did not have a good answer. But you know what that did for me? That lit a fire in me to be like, why do I not know what I'm passionate about? Oh my goodness. And that wasn't even the end of the game, because you can't just go out and be like, all right, I'm passionate about this. Whee! Sometimes you can. But what you can do is look at what are the things you have interest in. Let's just start with an interest. Maybe not even a hobby. So passion, hobby, interest. Let's just start with interest. What am I interested in? Go and do that. Put yourself in a situation where you have an opportunity to explore your interests. And what happens is some of those interests, you're going to be like, yeah, I don't really love that. Now I realize why I thought I liked that, but you know, I don't really like this part of it. So I'm not going to do that anymore. But some of those are going to turn into passions. Let me give you an example. I had an interest for this game called pickleball. It's like taking the world by storm. It's kind of like tennis and ping pong combined. It's like lazy man's tennis. It's so fun though. It's so fun. It's so social. And now I played, I had an interest. And I went and I tried it, and holy cow, I am like so passionate about it now. It's so much fun, right? Now, this is just a simple example, right? This might not lead to your purpose if you find a sport like I'm sharing right now, but do that more and more and more in your life, right? I knew that I had an interest in being in service and being in a role where I could speak. So what did I do? I went and I volunteered at my spiritual center to be one of the hosts, right? And that just allows me to be on my feet, be in my flow, which I call my natural flow or path of least resistance, or where I add the most value, where I feel the most alive, right? And all of a sudden I'm adding all this value because I'm like, I'm out in the front and I'm doing the thing that I love. I'm not behind a computer typing in, you know, spreadsheets. That's not my flow. That's somebody else's flow though. They get joy out of that. That's just not mine. So I kept finding ways, and I challenge the folks that are listening here to look for things that you either have an interest in and go and do them. And they may turn into a passion. And find the things that you feel good at when you're doing them and go find ways to be in service, right? Go find ways to actually do those things. Because what happened at the spiritual center, all of a sudden they asked me to do the announcements. Now this was actually a year later, or maybe even later than that. That's when I do the announcements on stage. So now I'm on stage in front of hundreds of people doing something that I know that I'm good at. I don't even know necessarily that I want to be a professional keynote speaker, but I'm exploring that. And I'm getting more information from my environment about how I feel in that moment. And I'm like, wow, this feels good. I want to do more of this. So do you see how an interest can turn into a passion? And then as you practice that and find more opportunities to be in your passion, all of a sudden, it's my belief that that is when your purpose is revealed to you. Your purpose is revealed to you when you're in the moment practicing your passion, when you're at that higher level vibration. Because when you're having fun, when you're feeling free, right? When you're in the moment doing these things, you're at a high vibration. And in my experience, not that we're going to get on a law of attraction conversation right now, but that's how the universe works. We start to attract more and more opportunities, more and more people that are at that same vibration. I'm getting a little bit psychological here now, I know, but I'll reel it back. But ultimately, that I feel is the pathway to discovering our purpose. We don't really discover it. It discovers us, in my experience.
No, very much so. And you know, I'm all about energy anyway. And yes, the energy we give off is the energy that we create. So of course, if we attract back. So of course, if we start to resonate at a higher vibration, then we will bring those people into our life, as opposed to sort of being victim or anger or feeling sorry for ourselves. But one thing that sprung to mind when you were talking about passion, and, you know, if someone's coming in there asking me about what I'm passionate about and, you know, and I'm trying to find my passion, the words that sprung to mind that came to me are, you are your purpose. Mm. It's just, you know, you are, because this is all about consciousness ultimately, right?
Yeah.
Our purpose is to be on this earth and experience and learn and grow and learn the lessons that we're meant to learn. That's actually our purpose, but it's how we go about doing it and feeling it and engaging it. So of course, when we get rid of the blocks, then we can actually feel our purpose and we move in that direction. In other words, we've learned the lessons. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I'm gonna add another layer to that. I feel that we all actually have the same purpose. And I know, again, this might sound counterintuitive, right? It doesn't mean they all look exactly the same. They don't have the same flavor, but I feel like we're all here. This is what I believe. We're all here with the same purpose. And that is to be in service to others inside of our greatest gift. Right? So that's why I say, find that thing that lights you up, that when you do it, it like gives you life, it gives you energy. Because when you're in that space, you're the most aligned with your source. You're literally giving the most value. You are the highest and best use, to use a real estate term. You are in the highest and best use of you as a spiritual being living this very human experience.
Very much so. Yeah.
When you find ways to be in service to others inside of your greatest gift, I feel like that is all of our purposes. Now, that might look very differently for different people, because you have different gifts and you're going to be in service of different types of people. So that's.
So again, this is about raising the energy levels. This is what I write about in my book. I talk about these different energy levels. So we start off with just us. My purpose is all about me. What do I want to do? But as you elevate your energy, and when you get to level 4, becomes one of service, of what can I do for you? And by helping you, and by helping to elevate you, I feel so much better about myself. But then actually, as we elevate even higher, it becomes a win-win situation. You see, because my byline, other than be free, be firm, be fearless, is compromise is, settling is outdated and compromise is overrated. Because to compromise is actually to take away a little bit of ourselves. So actually, as we go up to a higher level, it's about a win-win situation. We're not compromising. We're finding how we can both benefit. And then what you're talking about, once we really get to that passion and purpose, becomes where everybody can win. So how, it's not just how I can be of service to you, Clinton, but how can what we're doing be of service to everybody so that everybody benefits, which of course something like this does, because... Yeah. Your message is helping so many more people. So tell me a little bit more about your story.
Okay, so I'm going to bring you back. So it's 2008, it's 2009, right around that cusp of those 2 years. And we all know what happened, right? Big financial collapse around the world. I'm in the US. I know that you're in the UK, and I'm sure that you guys experienced very similar things that we experienced. And here I am. So I'm in a seminar. Okay. There's like 200 people all around me, and I'm at the microphone, and I'm certainly not leading the seminar. Okay. I am lost at this point in my life. I literally I just lost my property. I lost my credit, and I lost my business, and I absolutely lost my confidence. Like, my confidence was shattered, Rena. Like, totally shattered. And I'm at the microphone and I'm sharing how lost I feel and like, what do I do next? And
by then, you were already a speaker?
No, I had started, I've been speaking for 15 years. So I had been speaking, but not as a professional speaker getting paid to speak and not coaching other speakers. But I was speaking in my sales jobs and speaking in my entrepreneurial businesses. So I have this mentor, Justin, and you know, perhaps I can tell you more about him later if it's relevant, but he really had put me in positions to really expand and flourish. And I had made the first six figures for the first time in my life as an entrepreneur. And, you know, I was coming off several really great years, okay, leading up to 2008, 2009, 2010, which was a really dark 3 years for me. And all of a sudden the market changes, right? That's when I lose my property, my business, and my credit and my confidence. So I'm at the microphone, and Chris, His name is Chris, the seminar leader. He looks right at me in front of 200 people. I'm at the microphone standing. I'm totally vulnerable. And he says, "Clinton, you are dead inside." And it was just like, ugh, it was like a stake to my heart, right? But he totally was speaking to my soul. Like, he was spot on. I was dead inside. I felt dead inside. I felt like a walking zombie. And it was
What did that feel like?
That felt like glazed over eyes, like not wanting to talk to people when I'm naturally a talkative person, totally shut down. Kind of felt like I was inside of a room and it was so bright outside, but all of the windows just had this like gloss and this haze and this smoke covering them. And I couldn't see through. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't see through. And I gave you kind of a visual there, but it felt terrible. Like it felt embarrassing. It felt humiliating. I felt, I was borderline like suicidal. Like I never really thought of how am I going to commit suicide, but I had empathy for people that have ever had those thoughts. That's how dark I was in my life. And it was in that moment that something cracked open in me in that moment, Rena, and I realized why my confidence was shattered. My confidence was shattered because I'd always been somebody who followed my intuition, right? And I know you know what I'm talking about here, but for some of the listeners who perhaps are like, well, tell me a little bit more about what that is. It's not a conscious reasoning, like a logical reasoning. Intuition is more like a feeling. It's more like a knowingness. Like you just feel that something is right, so you do it. And not every time I ever did it, it was always either the exact right thing or something even better happened, or something happened where I learned and maybe it's not what I wanted to happen, but it was always perfect. And it was like, it brought me to the next step in my life. Right. So I believe that everything's always perfect, even when it's not, like I said earlier. So I'd always been somebody to follow my intuition. Like several years prior to that, I had this intuition to go overseas to Singapore and visit a friend just out of the blue. I had no money. I had no reason to believe that was like a good idea. Took off time and work, 2-3 weeks, boom. And what happened, I was in the height of my career, my first career out of college at that time. What happened when I followed that intuition, Rena, was this fire of passion lit up in front of me or in me around culture. And I referenced this really briefly previously. And that's what brought me to graduate school, where I studied organizational psychology and the cross-cultural adjustment process that people go through when they get sent overseas on an assignment or when they're involved in a merger and acquisition. And I studied emotional intelligence as well. I combined all that in my major. So I'm a little bit of a psych geek, if you can't tell. I've been studying neuroscience for like 20 years and just I kind of geek out on it. Not the foremost expert, but I know more than the average person about the brain. And I say that a little bit of credibility because I'll throw in some psychology things here throughout our talk. So back to my story. So I had always been somebody who followed my intuition. And in that moment when Chris says, "You're dead inside, Clinton," I realized, holy cow, my confidence is shattered because my intuition failed me. It must have failed me. How could I have bought these two properties in 2005, 2006 in San Bernardino, California for all the wrong reasons? How could I have done that? My intuition must have failed me. And that's, you gotta understand, that's my whole like model of the world. That's how I worked through, like I would have an intuition, I would do it, it would always work out. It would always be exactly what I said earlier. I would always either learn something or it would lead me to something new. And how could I possibly live in this world if my model of how I actually feel safe and how I make choices is shattered? Okay. So fast forward about a week, I'm taking a walk in nature. And this is I share in some of my talks, these habits called black sheep habits. And these black sheep habits are things like meditation, like affirmation, like visualization, like solo walks in nature where you do contemplation, like journaling, things that, you know, they're not that out there in today's day and age, potentially in some circles, but in a lot of circles, you don't find some people meditating in some circles. It's that thing where you have to be okay with maybe doing things a little different or looking a little different kind of like being an entrepreneur. You're a little bit of a black sheep. Like most people are, you know, going down the straight and narrow. So anyways, I was doing one of my black sheep habits that I call a contemplation. I was taking a walk in nature a week after Chris says I'm dead inside. And here I am, I'm out in nature. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I realized, oh my goodness, my intuition didn't fail me. I failed my intuition. I realized in that moment, it's like a flash of vivid color comes in my face of and me seeing me buying these properties and my intuition telling me, don't buy these properties. This is not the right, it's not the right time. These aren't the right people. You're buying these for the wrong reason. So many signals from my intuition. And I said, go away. I don't want to hear from you right now. I did not listen to my intuition. Why is that?
Why is that? Why? Because obviously at the time when it first happened, you thought, oh, my intuition failed me.
Yeah.
And then obviously you've had this realization saying, no, I failed my intuition. And it sounds like retrospectively, you were an onlooker looking at the story, realizing I did have all these signs, but I wasn't listening.
I mean, that's exactly what happened. I realized that my intuition did communicate to me. And for whatever reason, whether it was I wanted to buy the properties because, you know, I thought maybe I could make money or whatever reason, I made the wrong choices. I bought the properties for the wrong reasons. For whatever reason, I disregarded because I felt like this, I knew better. And it was so unconscious. Right? At this time in my life, I wasn't really even that conscious that I was the guy who followed my intuition.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
when I actually made the choice.
What I'm hearing from you, Clinton, is what you're saying as you're talking about this is you're using the word I a lot. And of course, I, the ego, right?
Yeah.
So it came from that point. It came from that other energy, which we need, and it's usually there to protect us. But you didn't have a balance between the ego and that other side, that intuitive side that needs to be balanced to take a guided but protected approach in our life.
Okay. Absolutely.
So go on. So you're obviously coming from a place of ego, no insult meant by that, whatever. We're talking about ego in the spiritual sense.
Yeah, 100%. And that was the moment, literally. I love that you just brought that up because that was the access point where I had this spiritual awakening. And it wasn't about I anymore. And it's not like it happened overnight. Like, oh, I'm conscious, I'm free. That didn't happen that way. But it cracked me open. And then when I got that, I was like, oh my goodness, I can trust my intuition. My intuition is, in my experience, my belief is my intuition is my source. That is my spirit or whatever you all believe in out there, whatever it is. That's the communication, right? That's my guidance system. And I'd always followed that unconsciously because I didn't really know, I wasn't conscious to it. Now I become conscious to it in that moment, like, holy cow, I have been just kind of doing it all on my own. And every once in a while I'd follow my intuition, but I didn't know it. Now I have the opportunity to rebuild that trust with my intuition. And that was a 7 to 10 year journey of digging out of that feeling like I couldn't trust my intuition and I couldn't trust me. I couldn't even separate who's me and who's source. Like it was so, so challenging. But that was really the experience that broke me open. And I went on this sort of spiritual journey where it was even deeper than just personal growth, like reading books. It was like a lot of the black sheep habits that I mentioned, the meditation, the visualization, the contemplation, the hiring coaches, and really going deeper on like, who am I really? Like, I know my strengths and weaknesses, but who am I really? And really seeking a more meaningful life.
And it's interesting saying that you've done this, by then you've done your undergrad and your postgrad, right?
Yeah.
In psychology. And yet still, didn't truly know who you were or who you were meant to be. Or it's about not being, I refer to it as you're just not connected, right? At this point, you were not connected with your source.
Yes.
You were not being one. And of course, the source is like it's a bit like the national grid, you know, it's once plugged into it, because everybody is plugged into it, but you were not. There was a bit of a short circuit. So you weren't actually connected to your source and understanding who you were and understanding what those downloads meant, what you were meant to.
Yes. I just got the chills, Rana. So that you just nailed it. Mm-hmm. You just totally nailed it with that grid visual. Totally got the chills. Whenever I get the chills, again, I feel like that's my intuition telling me, wow, that's truth, right? Anyone's ever felt the chills out there? Take that as a sign. Like, that is your intuition telling you. And I always say, follow the tingles, right? That tingly feeling. I believe, I'm going another direction here real quick. I believe that tingly feeling you feel when you watch a movie. I just gave you an example of when you get the tingles when somebody says something. I'm going to give you another experience of feeling the tingles and what my belief is around that and how that you can utilize that in your life. So have you ever felt really tingly when you're like listening to music that really is that music that totally puts you in the zone and you're just like, you feel amazing? Or if you're out watching an artist, an actual musician play, and they're so in the zone. Have you ever done that? They're like so in the zone. They're so like, they're in it. And the things that they're creating are so beautiful. And you get the tingles. You get that sort of vibration feeling, right? Have you ever felt that way, Rena?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm talking about? Absolutely. So it's my belief that we want what that person has. Does that mean we want to be a musician? Not necessarily, but we want to be in our flow. That person, that musician, is totally in their element. They're in their flow. They're in their highest vibration that we've been talking about here. And we all, as, again, spiritual beings living this human experience, we want that. We seek that. We crave that. We want to feel good. This is what I started our whole conversation off with. We want that innately. But we want our unique version of that. And that's where consciousness comes into play. A lot of times we want that and we follow what we think we see on TV. Like, oh, that person is having a really great life. They're doing real estate. So I got to go do that. No, it's find what's unique to you,
yeah.
Right? It might not be that same thing. It might not be music. So anyway, so we've got that feeling, that tingly feeling. You feel the same thing maybe when you're watching a movie that you're totally inspired by. You get that tingly feeling. Same feeling when you're petting your cat or your dog, or if those of you who have children, you're holding your child when they're not crying, right? And they're and they're being really sweet, right? And you get that warm, tingly feeling. Well, it's my belief that feeling, that warm, tingly feeling, is why we're all alive. It's what makes us uniquely human,
yeah.
To feel that feeling. Yeah. It's our right. It's our gift. To feel that feeling and to find ways to give that feeling to other people.
Yes, exactly. So it's about being in the flow, and being in the flow is when we are able to connect so much more. But we just want to challenge you here. So that's the flow feeling, the tingles. What about when we get the niggles, which we feel here in our gut, in our stomach? Because that's our intuition telling us something as well.
Yeah, I would say that's kind of the opposite version of, well, don't do that. Or maybe it's not don't do that, but maybe it's, you know, have some more considerations before you make that choice. Or is that really what you want? I mean, it's different for every single person. And I'm not like the tingle master or the niggle master. I've never heard that term before, but I understand what you're saying. But I would say that just start to pay more attention to what you actually feel in your body. So many people around the world, and I speak a lot actually in the UK, and I know it's a little bit of a more reserved culture than the US, where maybe feeling isn't as acceptable, or at least telling people about it. But still, I challenge you to really get present to what you are feeling, because that is a signal, that is a communication that you can utilize to move into more alignment in your life and have more purpose and meaning in your life.
Beautiful. So this was your spiritual awakening, and you were doing the black sheep habits. So we've got things like journaling, allowing yourself to be present, contemplative walking, meditating. Yeah. And this was your, very similar to me actually, when I finally made my commitment. I mean, I had so many opportunities to awaken spiritually, and I'd go through little phases. And then then life was going well again. So I put it on the back burner until eventually I couldn't ignore it anymore. So like you, I made that commitment of making sure I was going to meditate, and making sure I was going to journal, and making sure I was going to engage in self-care to get myself better. And I would have never looked back and never would look back. So we're black sheep together, which is absolutely fine. But anyone listening to this, actually, they challenge you and say, we're white sheep.
White sheep?
Because of the listeners. Yeah. Yeah, we are the majority now. So, okay, so you did this. And then what happened? Obviously, like you said, this was a journey of several years.
Yeah.
And then how did you really start to engage in your purpose and get into speaking? Because I'd love us to get on to sharing some of the tips that you shared.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So again, I continued to find opportunities now that I had more a clear vision of not necessarily where I wanted to go, but how I wanted to add value was in a way where I'm on my feet and I'm using my voice, right? And so I would just continue to put myself in opportunities to do that. So literally in jobs, I would always be the one that was in a sales role. I would always raise my hand to be the leader. I would always be the one that's like, if you need a presentation, I'll make it happen. And really, I want to speak to this. Really, it's stepping into fear. Let's talk about the be fearless part of your podcast.
Yeah,
right?
I was about to say how.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because as a speaker, right, my profession is most people's number one fear in their life. That's how I make a living, right? And that's just a fact. And it doesn't mean that I'm not scared every time I speak. I get nervous every single dang time. But what I've found is when I have this intuition and I just know that I'm supposed to be speaking more, right? It's scary for me too. So pick whatever it is that all your listeners, whatever you're watching or listening, whatever for you is that thing that you just know intuitively is the right thing, but it scares the crap out of you. I want you to hear this. What I have found over the years, I'm 44 years old, over the 44 years of my life, is that the absolute magic in your life happens at the exact intersection between that knowingness that something is right for you, that it's just the thing that you that is drawing you, it's pulling you towards it. So the magic happens between the intersection of that knowingness and the absolute unknowingness of how you're going to do it. The fear on the other side of the not knowing. So the magic is between the knowingness that something is right for you and the unknowingness of how you're actually going to pull it off and the fear of how you're going to pull it off. It's the intersection right between the middle. So I just stepped into that fear, right? Every opportunity. And I know that we've got to be comfortable. We got to start getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? We've got to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because, and I don't mean our whole life we're going to be uncomfortable. There's never going to be any bliss or any joy or any a feeling of, you know, feeling good. But it's that zone of stretching, right? That stretching, that expansion, that's where life happens. That's where we actually have our purpose revealed to us. Not when we shrink back and we say, I want to do what feels safe. I'm not saying go do something dangerous. It's different. It's do something that lights you up and you feel called to do it and step through that fear.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of five things coming to mind there. One is the stretching. It's just like an elastic band, right? If we stretch ourselves for long enough, we'll never go back to where we were before. So of course, what happens is we grow. But the other thing that I think about my speaking career, and like you, I've been a keynote speaker, traveled all around the world. Yeah. And I know my confidence grew. I mean, I had to go out of my comfort zone. I was petrified. I mean, God, I remember lecturing in China. I mean, you get no feedback from the audience there. Yeah. All you can hear is the translation going on in the background and like in these still faces. It's only when you get the feedback later, they were like, yeah, that was brilliant. So you can't even necessarily feed off people's energy, right? I know when lecturing to an American audience is completely different. You can hear the awesome, that's great going on in the background. But some countries, not the case. But I know for me, what grew my confidence and what helped me overcome my fear, because like you, I come on stage and people think, she's such a natural. There's nothing, you know, she just does this and it's so easy for her. And I would challenge people, and I'm sure you would agree, it's not necessarily easy. It's about A, being prepared to overcome the fear and take the steps. And then the other thing that I think helps to overcome the fear is the belief in you of what you want to say and the message that you have to say, that outweighs the fear.
1,000%. And I want to speak to that fear. And anyone who feels like, well, I'm not a speaker, so I'm going to tune out now. No, if you are an entrepreneur, if you're a professional, if you're really, if you're in corporate wherever you live, or if you're actually an entrepreneur, some of the most prominent people on the planet. I know one of the most wealthiest person in the US, his name is Warren Buffett. A lot of people have heard of him before. He says right now, he says speaking, becoming a speaker, not like having a speaking business necessarily, but becoming a proficient speaker is the number one skill that you could learn right now in today's day and age, the number one skill. And any of the professionals out there that are like, well, I don't really ever want to have a business necessarily, but I want to grow as a professional. He also goes on to say that you will earn 50% more in your career as you become a better speaker. If you perfect the skill of being a great speaker, because it's not just about being a great speaker, you become a great leader of people. You become a great conveyor of messages to inspire your team. There's so many reasons to become a great speaker, right? So that's, I want to just lay the groundwork there for anyone that's like, oh, well, speaking's not for me. Well, it might not be the thing you want to turn into your profession, unless it is that thing where it is that thing that turns you on and you're like, wow, I feel called to do this. Well, then great. You just need a few things, right? You need to speak. When you speak, you become a better speaker. Go figure, right? You need to actually have the repetitions. You've got to get the repetitions in. And you've got to have guidance as well. You know, that's why I coach speakers. You have to have guidance from somebody that's actually doing it, right? Somebody that actually can then not only give you guidance, but give you correction and say, wow, you're doing this amazingly well. You don't even know how good you're doing this. This is like your superpower. Every speaker that I work with, I find their superpower. We all have a superpower as a communicator, right? A lot of us just don't know what it is. And then you've got to get the right correction. And as we do this, we have a deepened level of awareness, right? We have a deepened level of awareness. And then with that awareness, we have more courage to go and try to implement more things from stage. And then we get new feedback from our audience. And all of a sudden our confidence goes up and we have a deepened level of awareness. This is my world-class model, right? I teach people to become world-class. And that doesn't mean speaking all around the world necessarily, although I can help you do that. It doesn't mean making 10 grand a speech. I can help you do that too. But what it means is being effective at inspiring change, inspiring action. And it starts with a deepened level of awareness, courage to implement what we're learning along the way, our new awareness, and that brings more confidence. But then it just comes back to a deeper level of awareness. We're not world-class yet. We need more repetitions. We need more guidance. We need more correction. So it's this process.
Which gives process. Us the picture of one of the C's, which is the capability.
Yes, yes, 100%. And how do we overcome fear? Let's talk about that really quick. Anyone's like, well, I get really nervous when I go on stage. So do I. I've been on thousands of stages. I get nervous every single time. But you know what? I start to understand how to transmute that fear. And this is something that's going to be really powerful for our listeners and viewers today. So there's this feeling that we feel when we're walking down, picture this, you're walking down a path, you're hiking in the woods. I love hiking. And you come up against a bear. Holy cow. You're going to have all these chemicals firing in your body and you're going to have this tingly feeling. It's not the same tingly feeling I told you before, although it kind of is. It's like, it's more physiology though, in this sense where you're like, wow, danger. You're assigning the meaning danger to that. So it's a definition, danger, and you do whatever you do in that moment. Well, let's give you another example. You're on a plane and you're actually like really excited to jump out of that plane. Like, I don't know if anyone out there has done that. I've done that. I was really excited. I was a little scared, right? There is a little element of danger there, but I felt the same exact feeling in my body as I would feel if I came up against a bear on a path. Same tingly feeling in my body, same physiology going on. It's that fight or flight response. And I decided to name it excitement. I defined it. I assigned a meaning to it called excitement. And I jumped out of the plane. I didn't jump towards that bear, right? That was danger. I assigned the meaning danger versus excitement. It was the same dang feeling, the same physiological response in my body for the most part. So I tell you that little mini story because when you're going on stage, you're going to feel this feeling and it's going to feel like a bear is about to attack you. But it's not a bear. It's not danger. In fact, the audience wants you to succeed. The audience wants you to succeed. So what I do, a couple things I do, I'll give a couple little tips right now that I do to alleviate that fear. Mm-hmm. The number one thing I do is I say, Clinton, and I'll even say it to myself, you're about to do something of significance. Because every single time you speak in front of an audience, whether it's five people on a Zoom call or on a podcast to hundreds of thousands of people, or whether you're on a stage of 5,000 people and right in front of you, it's an honor, really. It's an honor. It's a privilege to be able to communicate something. And it's not about you. It's not about me on stage. So what happens when I say, Clinton, you're about to do something of significance? It does something in me and it will do something in you. And what it does is it shifts your concern from yourself to your audience. And it shifts your energy from your head to your heart, right? And now all of a sudden you can picture yourself, you can visualize yourself sitting in that audience and you identify, and I teach you how to do the interviews and the research before the speech and in the morning of the speech when you're shaking hands and kissing babies and high-fiving people when you first get there, to collect the information to assure that when you speak, you're speaking to the collective pain in that room so that they know, wow, Rena really gets me. She really understands what I'm dealing with. And in that moment, now you have an opportunity to become world-class. Right? Until they know that you actually care and you understand their pain, you're never going to be world-class. You're never going to make the impact you want to make as a speaker. Right? And this is just a simple little tip, right? To shift from your head to your heart. I'm about to do something of significance.
But also you're shifting from the listener's head to their heart by speaking to their pain point.
Totally. 100%.
So again, it's that synergy of connection.
Yeah.
And this connection is so much stronger than this connection.
Yeah. Yeah. One other tip, you know, we talked about, some of the tips and principles I give to help people become world-class. So one of them is quite simply this: stop saying so many facts and details. And when you're delivering a speech, it's not like writing a book. It's not like it's not all linear, right? Tell more stories. You might write this down if you're listening. Facts tell, stories sell. Not that we're trying to sell anything, but anytime we're communicating, we are enrolling people in our ideas, right? In way of thinking. And sometimes you are selling things if you're a speaker, obviously, but ultimately facts tell, stories sell. Doesn't mean you don't tell any facts. Some personalities, So, part of becoming a world-class speaker is learning how to speak to different cultures, learning how to speak to different personality types, different value sets in the room, right? Not everybody's like you. So you've got to learn to communicate, whether you're talking to your team of five in your company or you're talking to a 5,000 person audience as a keynote speaker, you need to learn to speak to everybody's unique situation, right? So, where was I just going with that? I was telling you something important.
Facts,
I was going
to facts tell stories. Yeah. Tell.
Okay. So one more piece on that. It's the psychological piece to that. Mm-hmm. There's actually been studies that show, okay, picture this. If you're speaking and you're just delivering a bunch of facts, which again, you need to add detail and facts to satisfy those people in the room that need that. Mm-hmm. But you want to tell, in my opinion, about 70% story and 30% facts in a keynote speech, especially 45 minutes keynote speech or longer. 70% stories, 30% facts. People don't remember what you say. People don't remember what you do. Maya Angelou says people always, always, always remember how you make them feel. And people feel more when you tell them stories, when you give them visuals. So there's this study that shows your brain waves. Now, I know people listening can't see this, but just picture and imagine
brain waves.
going up and down, up and down, yeah. up and down, up and down. And your audience, when you're telling facts, they're also going up and down, but they're at a different wavelength as yours. They're not synced up. As soon as you start, I can't see my hands, but as soon as you start telling stories, they start to sync up. Your literal brain waves sync up. So folks, have you ever noticed when you're telling a story, all of a sudden your audience leans in or your team leans in? They're actually listening to you. They're not checking their phone, right? They're not getting up and going to the bathroom. Tell more stories. Beautiful. That's just another massive tip.
And you tell it so, and you tell that, you give that advice so beautifully. Give me some data. So I know when you're speaking as well, obviously when we want to speak to people, we've only got a few minutes left, so we'll see this quickly, but when you're speaking to people, some people are more visual, some people are more auditory. It's only about 10% that need the facts, right? Is that right? Is it 40% visual? Is 60% visual, 40% visual?
It depends on where you get your data from. There's different information out there.
What's your data?
My experience is that everybody needs a little bit of certainty in their life. And it's actually one of the basic human needs. Tony Robbins talks a lot about this, that really that everybody needs certainty. Different people need different levels of certainty. Do I know an exact statistic on it, ratio? I don't know. I just know that everybody loves stories.
Yeah.
Everybody loves stories.
The majority is visual, isn't it? It's visual and audio, and the pure 100% facts. You know, if we think about accountants and numbers, et cetera, they need some, but it's generally a lot less. Like you say, people are going to remember how they felt, not all the facts. That's what the PowerPoints that you give them later are all about.
Yeah, the number one key here, I'm going to give another massive tip here. And I don't usually give this tip away, but you're very nice.
I'm going to give you this tip.
So I'm actually going to give you two tips. Literally one of these tips, I paid over $5,000 to get this next tip I'm going to share with you. Okay. And I'm going to give it to you for free. So in this tip that I'm going to give you, literally has helped me earn tens of thousands of dollars. More importantly, it's allowed me to become a world-class speaker. It's not the only thing, but it was a massive, massive quantum leap. And that is this. And if anyone's listening out there right now intently, buckle up and write this down. It's going to sound potentially rudimentary in the beginning, which a lot of the things that I say do, but it's a deepened level of awareness of something that's so simple. And it's this. Tell stories in the present tense. Tell stories in the present tense. This right here, it sounds really easy. Trust me, it is not easy to do. It's not easy to become masterful. I'm going to give you a quick example. So, okay, first example is bad storytelling. So in 2005, it's even better. Several years ago, I was in grad school and I was in Brazil. And I went to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and I decided I wanted to go up and see this really cool mountain called Corcovado, right? Because that's the first example. Exactly. Instead.
Okay.
All right. It's 2005. I'm in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. I'm in the second semester of my grad school experience. And I'm in Rio. It's like 85 degrees out. Like it's hot. It's humid. I'm like sweating. Sweat's coming down my body. And I get on this tram because I want to go up. I'm going to see this amazing Corcovado, this amazing mountain. It's got this big statue of Christ Redeemer. So I'm going up the mountain. I'm chugging up. I finally get to the top and I look out and I see this enormous mountain emerging from the water called Pau do Açúcar or Sugarloaf Mountain. And then I notice the beautiful white sandy beaches of Ipanema and Copacabana. And at that moment, I look up and I realize this massive disparity between the richness and beauty of these black and white patterned sidewalks down on the beaches and the vast disparity between that and these little shanty towns called favelas just littered across the top of the mountain, right? So blah, 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 I can keep going on.
Masterful.
So you're right there next to me, aren't you?
I am, so with you.
You're right there next to me.
Phenomenal. Really. I mean, obviously your energy changes and things as well, but I'm with you 100%. Beautifully, beautifully demonstrated.
So if you're not
going to give us one more tip, because we got,
yes, I am. So first of all, if you're not telling stories, period, start telling more stories. And stories don't have to be long, elaborate, exotic stories of being in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. For all you fact folks out there, or any professionals that, like, you can tell those kind of stories, but there are three other kinds of stories. You want to know what they are really quick? I'll give you really quick bullets. Okay. So you can give case study stories. That's another example, different way to tell a story. Testimonials, much shorter. They get shorter as we go here. Testimonials are examples of people, maybe clients that you worked with, how you weave in the story of them so that people can relate, right? You're telling stories so people can imagine it. It's one of the most powerful words as a speaker. Write that down. Write down the word imagine. Say the word imagine when you're speaking, because people go into the visual, their visual way of thinking, and they start to paint the picture in their mind. And even if it's not exactly how you saw it, it's going to be more meaningful to them because they saw a picture of it. They didn't just hear the words, right? That's why we tell stories. And then the last example of a story is simply a simile or metaphor, right? Soft as a baby's bottom, right? That's kind of a silly one, but you know, that's an example. Simile, metaphor, utilize. That's a very, very short story. All a story is, it's an opportunity to create a visual and to create an experience and to create a feeling in people, because that's what they're actually going to remember. They're not going to remember the specific words that you say or the data that you give them. So that's the last thing on that. Is this good stuff so far? We're almost done, I know.
This is amazing.
Okay.
Yep.
So the last thing, I can't believe I'm giving it all away here. I'm not really. There's several other tips and tricks and principles. These are world-class speaker principles. These tips and tricks cheapens it. This is a principle that when you do this, you will be on your way to becoming world-class with enough repetition and the right guidance from the right person, right? So the last thing I'll share is this, Rena, and it really encapsulates a few of the principles I've already given, plus about 7 or 8 more principles. And that is, you have to have what I call the secret weapon of contrast. Contrast. When you're speaking, I don't care if you're just speaking to a 5-person team in a team meeting, or you're speaking to 5,000 people in a keynote speech, or doing a training, or anywhere in between, or you're doing a video online, you have to have contrast. Now, what the heck do I mean by that? Well, one example of contrast, and before, I'm going to leave you on a cliff there for 1 second before I give you that example. The reason why contrast is so important is because you have to have, wow, I just went into my head and I forgot what I was going to say, but that's okay. Contrast is so vital, because this is what I was going to say. You need to earn the right. I have so many things I want to say to you. That's why I keep getting distracted. But you have to earn the right every 9 seconds to maintain the attention of your audience. Now, that sounds like a daunting task, and we don't have time to go into all the details on this, but you have to earn the right every 9 seconds for the audience to actually continue paying attention to you. It doesn't matter if it's your parents in the audience. They will get distracted. It's basic human condition. So we have to become masterful at all these different ways of engaging our audience. And contrast, to go a little deeper into that before we close, it encapsulates so much. It encapsulates almost every principle I could possibly give you is encapsulated in this one master principle of contrast. So one example is facts versus stories. That's contrast, right? Some people don't want one thing. Some people want the other. Most people want both, and they need them. And so when you keep them going back and forth, it's like the picture and imagine someone on a seesaw going up and down, up and down. You just saw that in your mind, right? So that's why I said, imagine. There's a lot of lessons inside of the lessons here as we're talking. The reason why I leave you on cliff sometimes as well, because your brain is like, I want that cliff. I need to get that cliff back. I need to get whatever he's going to say to jump off the cliff. So Some other examples are, sometimes I talk really fast, especially when I'm excited. Can you tell I'm passionate about this? And by the way, if you're ever wondering what you're passionate about, start talking about things that you might have interest in. You start talking like this, you're probably passionate about it, right? That's generally what a sign.
Yeah. So speed. I've been doing that, slowing down. Like, you've been bringing me with you. I feel myself even being drawn into the screen as you slow down, and then you have a pause, and then you go faster. It's real.
Especially when you're giving, when you're, Yeah, when you're giving information as well, even when you're telling stories, but when you're giving information as well, sometimes you need to slow down, right, to make a dramatic impact. And I just did that in a pregnant way, just as an example. But notice how I'm also saying my words differently when I'm doing it. I'm enunciating different things. What that also does, not only does it create contrast, it's like a tapestry. There's different or topography. There's different topography in what you're saying. It allows your brain to grab on to more things versus just a static straight across the screen. And it allows the person's brain to slow down and actually process the information that you just said. Because sometimes when you do speak fast, it's good. It's variation. It shows passion. It engages people. But then you need to slow down so they can actually catch up and process. So that there's a million different ways you can have contrast, showing video versus doing straight lecture. When you're writing on the board, using different color pens, that incorporates something called accelerated learning. Right? That's why when you're at seminars and the group leader says, all right, everybody take 5 minutes to write this down, journal it down. If they're smart, they'll say use different color pens. Sometimes they don't have that awareness. I shouldn't say if they're smart. If they have that awareness, they'll say that. But that's also why they turn on the music, right? Because that creates accelerated learning. And it uses both sides of your brain. It allows you to retain more information, right? So there's so much psychology in all of this, but ultimately, if you want to become a world-class speaker, you need to start to understand things like psychology. You don't have to be a master at it, but understand simple, basic things we're talking about today. This is all basic stuff, right? Psychology, culture, personality, sales and negotiation, neurolinguistic programming. These are all areas of expertise. I have a certain level of expertise at, and that's why I can teach people and help people become world-class communicators, world-class speakers. And you can make the impact you want to make.
That's something you offer that on a one-to-one in your coaching and also your group coaching program that's coming soon too, right?
Yes. So I only work with very, very highly select people on a one-on-one basis. I mean, you have to have a, no kidding, burning desire to share your message with the world, and you got to prove it to me. And I want people that are hungry, like Les Brown hungry. Like, you want it so bad you can taste it, and you're willing to put in the work. And then, yes, I do work with aspiring speakers that want to launch their business in 90 days or less using my accelerated awareness framework. And I do that in a group format as well. That's how I help people. That's my healthy obsession, as Tony Robbins says.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. And of course your main keynote, like you said, we were talking about lighting and pilot lights and turning it into flames. And it's about reigniting the human spirit, which I think you've really shown us today. Well, you've certainly shown us your passion. That's for sure. So yeah, I'm going to give you a 10 out of 10. I should see. Can you see?
Oh, that? Nice.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, so people can connect with you, speakerposse.com, spelled speaker and posse, posse.com, yes. And that will also then link to the Facebook page. Is that a public group? So can anybody
yes,
that and join
as it? Of right now, join soon, because that is probably going to become a private group soon, but right now it's open to the public. It's okay. Relatively new. I've got 130, 150 some odd speakers from all around the world at varying levels of experience. So don't worry if you're brand new, don't worry if you're already seasoned. It's a great network and there's a lot of value at in speaker. Okay.
And do you come onto that and offer teachings, or you just
Okay. Currently every Friday at 10 o'clock Pacific time, which is 6 o'clock UK time.
In UK,
yeah. In UK.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. You come and offer more teachings. Oh my goodness. What more can people want? Fantastic.
Yes.
And they can also, that's the best way to connect with you, right? And they may well find Absolutely. You on LinkedIn. Just look up Clinton Young. You'll find him, the international keynote speaker and world-class coach. Well, you've been a world-class guest today, Clinton. So I am so, so grateful. We overran, but you just had so much to say. I was like, what the hell? People, there was enough contrast to keep people listening.
All right. Excellent.
Let's put it that way. So thank you so much again for being my guest today. And I think you'll all agree that Clinton definitely covered all aspects of how to be free, be fun, be fearless. So please hit the subscribe button so you can be notified when we have our next Be Free, Be Fun, Be Fearless podcast up and share with your friends through the video, audio, or through the articles that we write on so many different platforms. I am Dr. Rana Al-Falaki. Thank you once again, Clinton, for joining us today. So my last words, of course, be free, be fun, and be fearless.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Boss Ladies Mindset Channel powered by Crown for Success. Please tune in next week for another episode and don't forget to follow us on Instagram at RVPQueens, at The Girl Gang Confidential, at Crown for Success, at Strong Women Are Beautiful, and of course, at Boss Ladies Mindset.